from tragedy to triumph. Hosted by Aaron Lane.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Tragedy to Triumph. I'm your host, Aaron Lane, a man in long-term recovery who has dreams and aspirations of doing big things. Now, I've been clean and sober since 2016, and I believe that everything that happened up to that point has shaped the man that I am today. On a daily basis, we hear tragic stories in the news of people who lose their life to overdose, children displaced in the system. I mean, the list goes on. There's so much tragic stuff going on. But my goal here is to present you with amazing success stories from people who have changed their lives and gone from tragedy to triumph. My guest today is my friend Ashley. And Ashley, before we get in this amazing story, why don't you give the listeners an idea of what you're all about?
Thank you, Aaron. First and foremost, I'm a mom. I have two wonderful children, Taven, who is 12, and Tylee, who is 1.5. And obviously, I'm here because I am in recovery, and I have a little over a year. God bless me. Thank you. And I work in recovery. Everybody mostly knows me as the coffee shop girl at Oak Street. That's what I've been working there for 2.5 years now.
Wow.
Yes. So, and that has helped me so much through time with my sobriety. So I can't thank Oak Street enough. And I am about to start a new journey with a place called Hotel California by the Sea. It's a rehab facility. I'm sure you're aware of what it is. But
what they do, right.
Yes. So I'm getting ready to start there very soon, and I'm so excited about that. I will be a treatment tech there, so I get to actually live this like for a living and reach out and help other people in recovery.
I think that's beautiful because, you know, I talk to so many people, and one of the common denominators in everybody that comes on this show is that they give back, right? And especially those that are in recovery are saying, look, this is how I get to keep this, is by really involving myself, whether it be service work or even paid to work with other people, because you understand what it takes, you know, and you can connect, and it also makes you grateful for what it is that you have. So I want to commit first and foremost, I think it's awesome. And you know, one of the things that drew me to you, I've heard you talk many times. You know, you are my friend. I know that you have had some struggles, but you continue to start over and get back right into it. And that shows strength. And I think people need to be able to hear a story from somebody that has had many restarts and to show that there's a reason why you still do what you do. Now, before we get in all those, you know, what's going on, like, and I appreciate you kind of detailing what's going on today. Why don't we rewind the clock a bit? Want to go back as far as we can. Where are you from? Where'd you grow up? Siblings, stuff like that.
Well, I grew up in Western Hills in Bridgetown.
It's a part of Ohio.
Yes, in Cincinnati, Ohio. And I grew up with an older sister, Lindsay, and both of my parents, majority of the time. And my dad was an alcoholic, so I started AA at a really young age. I used to say my first meeting was like when I was 3 or 4.
Oh, wow.
I was already in AA because he had to go to AA, so I had to go with him. And I would sit there and color and be like, oh, my gosh, this, like, why do we do this? It's so boring. I never thought I would ever be in a place like that myself. And now that's like my life. I'm in AA. So in a way, like, I hated it at the time, but thank God that like I had roots, that I knew what AA even was. So I do thank my dad for, I don't thank him for being an alcoholic, but I thank him for, you know what I mean, introducing me to that. So I did know like where to go when it was like when I needed
when the shit
help.
Hit the fan.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, it, you know, and I appreciate you being able to detail that one, your dad is an alcoholic, mm-hmm. you know, or had, and is your dad still around today?
Yes, he is.
Is he in recovery or is he?
He doesn't like really do AA anymore, but like he is definitely not the same father that I grew up with, you know, I mean, for the better. Is what I'm saying. So,
well, then let's talk about that for a second. Okay.
Sure.
So as a kid, the things you witnessed and just for the purposes of like respecting some of those traditions, we're going to just say 12 step moving forward in this context of the conversation. Not that you've already broken your own anonymity. I've essentially broken mine, but just out of respect for 12 step programs. So with that, your dad being a part of one when you were a kid, you were exposed to it and brought to meetings, and you're saying you're coloring and mm-hmm. and you're getting all the vernacular of what, you know, recovery is about. But was your dad in and out then?
Yes.
And how did that affect you growing up?
It affected me a lot, actually. I just remember being like extremely clingy to my mother. I wanted my mom all the time. I remember like starting kindergarten and her dropping me off, and I just was like, oh my gosh, like the whole day I wanted my mom, and she got me, you know, like my school supplies, and even sitting at my desk having like my colored pencils and my markers. And one of the girls was like, can I, can I use your mark? And I'm like, no, they're from my mom. Like they're mine, you know, like
right.
just being wanting my mom all the time, because my father was just so unpredictable.
Right.
One minute he was just off the wall, crazy, hilarious, goofy, you know, jump in the pool with all his clothes on.
Right.
And the next minute it was like restless, irritable, and discontent, and you better look out, you know? So I never really knew like who I was going to get. So I just kind of strayed from my dad as a child, and that really affected me through my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up with people in my house that had issues with substance use. My dad's not an alcoholic. My mom, not, you know, nobody. And sometimes, you know, and I'm grateful for that. But it also, because there was no one in my family that I could see this, when my issues happened, I didn't know who to turn to. I didn't have and some reasons, you know, if I'm being very honest, even when it was introduced to me, didn't seem like a great idea. But this is something that was planted in you young. And, it's unfortunate that, you know, here you're an adult child of an alcoholic, and you got the gene, I guess we could say, mm-hmm. because we're having this conversation. Now, your relationship with your mom growing up, very close?
I was very close with my mom, but that's a whole nother story and situation in itself. I do not ever recall her being drunk, high, even smoking cigarettes, nothing like that as a child. And then she got hit by a drunk driver.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Like here we are talking about alcoholics, and she got hit by a drunk driver, and she had to have 4 metal rods placed in her back, and she got prescribed a pain medication, and she became an addict when I was older, probably like in middle school, high school is when all of this started.
So then we're going to go down that route because it's important. It's part of your story too. Just so we can get it out of the way, and because we can jump right into that, is when did you start seeing your own issues with substance use?
I would say probably around that time in high school. I really was not a partier. I wasn't a bad kid. I didn't get in trouble at school, nothing like that. A lot of times, like I said, I just wanted to be at home with my mom. We would rent movies all the time and stuff, and I was like a homebody. But I do remember my first encounter with pain medication, and I had like, you know, a headache or cramps or something. No, I had a fever. And my mom said, here, take this. It has acetaminophen in it.
Acetaminophen.
And,
okay.
And I didn't know.
Tylenol.
Obviously. Yeah. Like, this will break your fever. So I took it, and I remember feeling amazing. And I'm like, what is, you know? So after that, it's like, Mom, I have a headache. Mom,
right.
I have cramps. Mom, I don't feel good, because I wanted more of that. And I
that
didn't
feeling.
Even know what I was taking.
So are you're a teenager.
Yes.
About what, 15? 14, 15?
Probably, yeah, around. I was in 11th grade.
Okay, so you're, 16 probably.
Yeah,
absolutely. Wow. So really, the first time you had this, and then obviously your story starts with medication,
mm-hmm.
right? And you liked the way it made you feel, when your headache went away. Mm-hmm. I can relate. I know that feeling. I used mm-hmm. to get Fiorcet prescribed. And Fiorcet's great because it has Tylenol and caffeine and the butalbital, which is a barbiturate. So it was like a nice combination of things that it would get rid of the headache for the most part, but give you enough pep to like push through the day. But the phenomenon of this medication is it actually causes rebound headaches too. So the next thing you know, I'm taking it more and more, and it has the abuse potential. Now, something like Percocet, something like Vicodin that your mom's taken, yeah, you're damn right it's going to get rid of a headache, and it's going to cause some euphoria in most people, especially us who have that gene or that mutated receptor in our brain. Like, you enjoyed the way that it made you feel. And there's people I know that most people that have heard this at some point in their life have taken pain medication. And some of them get nauseous, and the other people enjoy it. And that's something to really be looked into. But here you are, 16, 11th grade, liking the way it felt. Next thing you know, you're having headaches, as I say in air quotes right now, all the time. And was your mom just handing them to you, right?
Yes.
Well, she had enough, and she was having struggles of her own.
Yes.
So to her, I mean, man, you know, like how, look, we can look at it a different way when you're in recovery and understanding, you know, where these things started. But as a teenager, being able to get this medication, you didn't see any issue.
No.
So, like, what did that start to change the end of your high school? Or, I mean, how quickly do you think it took off?
I would say it kind of just, like, happened a few times then. And then it was like, it went away. Like, it wasn't something that I really took off with,
right.
You know, went crazy with. So my drug use and drinking started probably when I was like 19 or 20, when I started going to bars and stuff. So, I am a singer, and I used to sing at a bar, every Wednesday, you know, but I would be there all the time. It was the Blue Note. I don't know if you remember
absolutely.
The Blue Note. Yes. I used to sing at the Blue Note all the time. So, I would go up there and I drove. So I would tell myself, like, no, absolutely no more than three drinks. You know, you can't have more than three drinks. And usually I would follow that. But it was like the more I went up there, the more I was breaking my three drink rule. You know what I mean? And you know, probably definitely shouldn't have been driving. So,
right.
Yeah.
So you started doing that. And I mean, you're obviously talented enough to be singing and to be booked on a regular basis and, you know, going there and having a good time, mind you. I mean, you know, that didn't start off bad. It started off as something that I believe you wanted to pursue. Is it maybe a career path too?
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that you said, look, I'm going to really, you know, go into? Did you sing a lot like growing up too?
Or yes. So
this was a huge part of like what your upbringing. Anybody else in your family musically inclined?
My Grammy.
So your Grammy's passed that into you, and
yes.
A lot of family encouragement to that.
Honestly, like, I felt like I didn't really have a lot of encouragement from my family at all to pursue anything. I had an older sister, and she went to college before me, and she just, like, could not make up her mind what she wanted to
right.
do. So they spent a lot of money. So when it was my turn, you know, it was like they almost, like, kind of deterred me, like, from going, like, to college. You know what
right.
I mean? Like.
Like, oh, great.
Yeah, I wanted to go to be a teacher. And I just remember them like, oh, well, you know, you really don't make a lot of money in that. And, you know, like, it's weird, right? You
right.
would think your parents would be like, oh, my gosh, all four going to college. But I honestly think they were kind of burnt out on it and financially after, you know, my sister went. So.
Okay. Well, that's fair. I mean, I don't know. I didn't grow up with you. I mean, but I can
right.
see that being the case, especially after your older sister, you know, couldn't figure it out for. I mean, she figured out something by now, I'm guessing, or she's still trying to figure it out.
She works in the school system.
Okay. So how funny is that, though?
Right.
Like, so, all right, just to kind of, you know, stay on task here, I'm sitting here and I keep thinking, you know, here you're exposed to pain medication, 11th grade. And it's, you know, you're doing it intermittently, right? Just here, there.
Mm-hmm.
And, but you always have a source. Like, and this is something you're going to at some point revisit, right?
Mm-hmm.
You are now singing your early 19. How old are you now?
33.
So 33 years old. So how long did you sing in the club like that or at the Blue Note and other places?
Till I met my first husband.
Ooh.
Honestly, you asked about like my ambitions and stuff. I really like wanted my career, honestly, to be a wife and a mom. That's
okay.
what I wanted more than anything, was to get married and have a family and be the soccer mom and, you know, take my husband's clothes to the dry cleaning and have dinner right. ready. And there's when nothing he comes wrong with home. That. And yeah, and honestly, I couldn't wait to get away. I wanted to grow up so fast because I wanted to get the hell out of that house.
Mm.
You know? And I thought my house and my family is going to be different. You know, I'm going to be better.
So better. So yes. Like you, and what was your reference point for that? What was so messed up about your childhood that you had to make it better?
There's not going to be domestic violence.
Okay.
There's not going to be drinking and drugs. I'm going to actually participate with my children and show up for their events. My parents, you know, really didn't come to any much of my, like, you know, things that I was involved in. So I just really wanted to, like be there, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
No, and I think I think a lot of us do. I think when we, you know, our intentions to be, especially when it comes to that, either you can be on two sides, right? Either you want to jump in and this is your life, or you're like, I don't want to have no kids. I don't want to do it. You know what I mean? So, and good for you for being able to identify that. However, that it's actually as a result of things that you witnessed growing up that we have basically glazed all over. So your home was filled with some domestic abuse. In what way?
Well, like I said, my dad was an alcoholic, so you never knew who you were going to get. And I recall at a young age, my parents getting into an argument in the kitchen. My mom had given my dad money to pay the water bill, and he didn't, you know. He was using everything to put it up his nose and drink, you know. Even like took, I think, money from like our savings that we had as children, was taking out loans from like work and stuff. So needless to say, that night we couldn't take baths or anything. We had no water because my dad had spent the money. And so they got into it, and I just remember my mom getting in his face and him grabbing her, you know, by her neck.
Yeah, and it gets out of hand. And yeah. You're young, right?
Yes, yeah. So this it got is a physical. Last,
right,
got
a
physical.
Lasting impression, though, too. Something that you witnessed as a young kid. So when you said earlier in this conversation that you never knew what dad you were going to get, this was what you meant.
Yes.
Okay. No, and I think it's important. I think it's important for us to identify these situations, because it's not unusual for people to see domestic violence in their own home, you know, across the board. I mean, it's just it's an unfortunate fact of life. But for it to affect you enough to be able to pick it out as an adult, too, must have had some impact in your life. Now, do you ever think, you know, if you could say, outside of the fact that your dad, who's admittedly an alcoholic, and then the traumas, was there anything else that really stood out to you in your childhood that you believe contributed to where we are today?
Oh, yeah. My parents ultimately got a divorce from each other, and both of them were like dating crazy. I just remember it was like every week dad had a new girlfriend, or, you know, my mom had a new boyfriend. And it wasn't so much that my parents' domestic violence stood out, because there wasn't too much between them. It was my mom's boyfriends.
Really?
And the biggest thing I would say as a young child was my mom's boyfriend came home late at night, I guess from the bar, and was drunk. They argued. My mom told him he needed to sleep on the couch. And I just remember her going to get a blanket from the closet. And that's when it got physical real quick. You know, they say fight or flight. And my sister's a fighter. And I'm the bird
flies. What you're like, I'm not engaging. I'm getting out of here.
Or free, you know, fight, flight, or freeze. And I just freeze. So she comes running out because she wants to save mom, you know. And here he's just, I mean, literally beating her. And she tried to call 911, and she's just a small child. And so right. He went after her. So I'm hearing all of this from my room, and I'm just hiding in my bed.
You're stuck. You're like,
yes, yeah. Because I don't want to be, I'm scared he's going to come and get me. So I just remember ultimately in the end, he threw her down the basement steps and put her through a wall. And the police showed up at our house, and they came in, you know, to check on everything and everyone, including me. And I just remember laying down and closing my eyes, like pretending I was asleep. And they're like, and I heard them too, like, oh good, she's asleep. She slept through the whole thing. But really, you know.
You were so afraid. Yeah,
I was just terrified in my bed.
And I don't blame you. I mean, I'd be terrified too. I mean, especially this is not somebody, one, look, I get it. I get that situation. I can see it in my head and you being a girl and, you know, all these things going on, this loud guy. I mean, just the violent nature of things. Like, right, why would most people, especially younger, want to engage in that? I mean, you, as you said, you were worried that he would come after you too. So that gives me a great idea, and I believe the listener too, of why you wanted to get away from all that and start a life of your own and be a good mom and not invite any insanity into your own home. However, a lot of times we're victims of our past or our circumstances, and we're in a lot of ways doomed to repeat the toxic things that we were exposed to. And a whole long list of those. I mean, people that were, you know, they say people that were sexually abused tend to abuse others sexually and verbal abuse or whatever those things are, psychological, the list goes on, that we turn do that. Because there's things in my marriage that I never thought that I would do, but I witnessed them growing up. And, you know, this is not to down anybody in my family or my dad or anybody like that, because it's the truth. And I have to own what I've done, and I have to look at my own part in all of this and understand that it doesn't, just because I witnessed it, doesn't make it, it didn't need to be repeated. And I, you know, and I'm not smart enough or educated enough on that stuff to really understand why we do those things, other than the fact of, a lot of times, as I said before, if we witness something, we're doomed to repeat that in a lot of ways.
Hurt people.
There you go. So, all right. So to get back, so now you meet a guy, you meet him at the, how do you meet him?
Well, I knew him from when I was younger, but at the time our age difference seemed pretty big, and he was in a band, and I was like, just wow. You know, he was the lead singer, and I was just like, oh my gosh, smitten, you know. And our paths crossed later in life, at the Blue Note. I ran into him there, and I was like, hey, do you still play the guitar? I need a guitar player. And we got together and started writing music.
Really?
Yeah, and fell in love, like, writing music together.
I mean, then something that I guess you connect with somebody on a, when people write music, any type of, you know, art in that way and creative, people have a way to come together, especially somebody that you, at one point, you said that you sought after him. What's the age difference here?
4 years.
Oh, okay.
So, but at the time, when I was in junior high, and he's already graduated high school.
That's what I'm saying. There's a little difference there. Correct. And was it a quick marriage? You jump right into it? I mean,
pretty much. I think we had only been together for 6 months when he had proposed. And
you're like, done, I'm doing it. Let's
yeah,
do it.
And he was in the Marine Corps as well. So we got engaged, and it wasn't long after that I was pregnant. And we got married, like, you know, right after we had the baby. And then right after that, we got stationed in North Carolina.
Oh, wow. So you live down there with him.
Yes.
You have a baby now.
Mm-hmm.
And new location.
Everything
I mean, what was
I
that
wanted.
Like? Right. That's like in your whole
mind.
World. Right. In your mind,
mind,
like, this
right.
is perfect.
Yeah. But honestly, I think I needed to check my motives, you know, and I didn't know that at the time because, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm selfish. It's all about me. But I'm really thinking, like, I'm getting everything that I want. I'm moving down here. I don't have to work, you know.
Right.
I can be a stay-at-home mom. I'm getting away from my crazy mother-in-law, away from, you know, my family. And it didn't turn out that way at all.
How did it turn out?
He deployed immediately. We were
not
only
sure
there.
Hold on. Do me a favor. You get to talk this way because you keep moving your head.
Sorry, because I'm looking at you.
Yeah, that's fine.
He deployed right away, probably like 3 or 4 months, I want to say, like after we got there. It was really quick. And I mean, he was gone for like a year.
Oh, wow. So
I mean,
you're
so imagine how old our child, you know, the difference when he left. I mean, as a baby and you come back to a toddler. And I mean, Taven really didn't even know who his dad was when
right.
he came back. He got off the bus. We were waiting for him and we were so excited. And imagine being so excited to see your wife and child and go to pick your child up and them scream, you know, and like to put me, give me to mommy, you know, put me down. Like, who is this person?
Well, I mean, but look, that tends to happen, I mean, with military families.
Right.
I mean, that's not unusual. Guys get deployed or women get deployed. They come back. I mean, they're gone for a bit and they have to be reintroduced. And but mm-hmm. this is ultimately, I mean, this has happened for many years for with a lot of families. So that's not really unique. But in your own life, for your situation, how did this cause problems? Because I'm guessing you said even being deployed for a long time, coming back. And were things just different?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my life went on while he was gone. So I had changed so much and just kind of had like a routine and a life like that I had set up. And then he just came back and it was really awkward. It was hard. It was like having a stranger living in your home. I can't even like explain it. And I don't even know why or how, but it really was like we were strangers.
I mean, how long before you were married did that happen? So you got married. You knew each other for 6 months. You get pregnant. You get married. You get deployed. Like, is this all within a year or two?
Yes.
So how quickly after you had moved down there did he get deployed?
Like 3 or 4 months.
So it wasn't like we're still talking early in a relationship. You guys barely know each other if you really break it down, right?
Right.
To begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's gone and here you are raising a child and trying just to figure out what it's like to be a mom. You know, corresponding back and forth, I'm guessing, while he's been deployed, he gets back and it's just different.
Yeah. And honestly, I think I had a lot of resentments towards him for leaving because, like I said, I'm selfish. I'm not looking at the fact that you're serving your country and there's a war going on. I'm looking at the fact that you left me. That's all I could think
of. Right. And you get that now. But at the time.
Right.
Okay, so let's talk about how you
came. That's the barrier, was I was resentful at him.
Okay. So you were angry, he gets back, and you're just like, how dare, you know, who do you think you are? And, you know, maybe he had a different way to parent that you didn't like either. I mean, there's a lot in that. So during all this, were you drinking and anything, or just kind of just not really? There's no real issue?
Some of the girls that were down there, like, we would drink together when we, like, all the wives would get together with their children all the time because our husbands were deployed. So that's pretty much what we did. But this isn't the first deployment. The first deployment that happened, I went home and I lived with my in-laws.
Okay.
Let me tell you, a year with your in-laws, it's just, it can't happen. So that didn't turn out well at all either. I already told you or had mentioned that I didn't have the greatest relationship with my mother-in-law. She was extremely jealous of me and my relationship with her son.
Weird.
She felt like I had taken him from her, and she verbally told me that.
Yeah, so, it's not you guessing, like, this is what you're experiencing.
Yes, so it ended up actually ultimately in an argument in their kitchen, and she came after me. I had the baby in my hands, and so I left and I went back to North Carolina. There was only a couple months till he got home and I found a house by myself. I moved from Ohio with a baby, drove. I put a hitch on my car, like paid $300 to put this daggone hitch on my car so that I could tow all of my stuff from Ohio all the way to North Carolina alone with a baby, find a home, find somebody to help me move in. You know, it was just like I did everything independently,
right.
You know. So and then he came back and it was almost like I really didn't know where to put him.
I get it. I mean, and that's something, you know, when we look at the ski, is it an important part of the story? Probably. I guessing if we're talking about it now, like you, because you were married to this guy for how long?
Our marriage lasted even after, you know, we left.
I get
but
that.
That's where my alcoholism took off is okay, when we got our divorce.
All right. So during that time, during mm-hmm. the divorce.
Yes.
Why was your alcoholism taking off?
I tried so many times to make our marriage work. We both did. We tried everything, church, counseling, you know, this, that, and the other. And I think I really felt like a failure. Like I couldn't make my marriage work, and ultimately my plan didn't work out.
Right.
You know?
This perfect picture, perfect idea of what the family is going to be like, and you're going to do this differently. Yep, here you are, and you had told yourself, You know, I relate to that because I remember going, like, my own marriage, like saying, I'm committed, I'm going to make this happen. And, you know, then obviously I had my issues with addiction too. And you just, you change and evolve and all these things. And you realize it's allowed to, it's okay to let it be broken. It's not going to work. We're desperately wanting it to. And because it's, even you know, you would try harder, it still seemed like it's falling apart. You're like, this doesn't make any sense. Why do I deserve this? And all these other things. When really, it's you, we should have just been able to throw up our hands and say, enough is enough. Okay, fine. Like, my life is gonna, can be a lot better. We just don't understand it all the time psychologically, at least in my own life. And I'm speaking for me, and I'm sure someone else can relate to that, right? So we have this idea in our head, and if we fall short of that, it's all, like, it doesn't matter.
And, well, honestly, I wanted him to come after me.
You wanted him to chase you, you mean? Like, yeah. In a positive way? Like, oh, you're like, I
want you.
I wanted
him to come get me.
Okay.
I wanted, you know. I'm sorry. And because he didn't, I felt worthless.
Okay. Well, you're not.
Right.
But at the time.
At the time, I wanted him to come get me.
So this was like some psychological thing. Like, I want him, like a movie.
Yes.
I want him to realize how good.
Right. Exactly.
Well, true.
And just like the movie. Yes. And because he didn't, I felt like I wasn't worth it.
Right.
You know, so I thought, if I'm not worth it with my own husband, I'm never going to be worth it to anybody. And now I have this child. Who could ever accept me and, more importantly, accept my child as their own because it's not their child?
Well, that's what's so silly, though, like, because it happens all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It does. But I understand that this is, it doesn't make change the fact that you're going through that. And you felt worthless. And you said, so what made you feel better about that?
Alcohol.
There you go. Okay. Yep. So you start drinking on
hardcore.
Like, and it just like right into it?
Right into it.
What did that look like?
Well, I moved back home to Ohio and I moved in with my mom for a little bit and it was a nightmare. I said earlier, my mom had a problem with pain pills and I can't tell you how many times I found her overdosed, you know, and that just added
like,
to my.
After you got back with
yes.
your, with, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You never really saw that, right? Like, it must have, her thing must have taken off while you were gone, right? Or gotten progressively worse.
I mean, it was pretty bad when I left. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to leave.
Okay,
you know?
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but you get back and she's overdosing.
Yes.
And that's causing stress, obviously.
Oh, yeah. And it's always, like, at the most important time.
Right.
Her first overdose that I ever experienced was prom day. I remember getting up in the morning and I could not wait to go to school. And I had the most amazing dress. So I get up with, you know, a skip in my step, you know, song in my heart. And I walk out of my room and I hear, and I look over and here's my mom naked on the floor, overdosed, you know, lips purple, not breathing. And there's bottles next to her. And the first time to see your parent like that, it's, you know.
Shot.
I can't
scary.
Even explain it. It's like, mom, oh my God, mom, you know? And, but then come the 10th, 12th time, it's like, damn it, Shirley.
Right. Get it together.
Right. Because it was always an important time. So when I moved back from North Carolina, right when I come back, I have this job lined up. Taven's starting school for the first time because I had always been a stay-at-home mom.
Right.
And it's St. Nick night. So the next morning, we're supposed to open St. Nick, take pictures. I'm going to work after
right.
being a stay-at-home mom for, you know, 4 or 5 years. And he's starting school. What an important day. So I get up all excited again and go to find my mom for her to participate. And I try to open her bedroom door and I can't because she's overdosed on the floor and she's laying, you know, down there. And for my son to see that, I had to call 911 and he's seeing his grandma taken out of our home on a stretcher. And that's how I started my first day of work in his first day of school. My very first day of work, I'm already calling them like, I don't even know what to say. I'm going to be late because my mom overdosed, you know. So that really, really increased my with my own grief and my own, you know, hurt. And then experiencing that, I just wanted to numb out.
Isn't that wild, though, how and I get a lot of times that, and because it's almost glamorized and women like, look, it's wine 30 or wine o'clock right now. Like, have a couple drinks. It's been a wild day. and faced with the fact, one, that your dad is an alcoholic, your mom has issues with substance abuse, and now the only way that you know how to fix it is to go ahead and tie one off too.
Exactly.
I mean, it's, look, whether, damn, girl. I mean, really, like no coping mechanism outside of the fact that the only thing that'll make this any better, because it's such an effed up situation, is just having some drinks, and I'm going to have a whole bunch of them.
Mm-hmm. And that exactly what you said. I had no coping skills. And I would say that all the time. Like, I don't know how to handle anything. I really don't. I did not know how to walk through anything, you know what I mean, without just being full of fear, full of anxiety. And the only way I knew to stop that and to shut it up was to take pills and to drink alcohol.
So knowing that your mom had an issue with the pills and you had experimented with them, but how does that get introduced to the picture for you?
As far as the pills?
Yeah.
Well, she had them, you know, so I just started taking them alongside with her. I thought I was better because I wasn't overdosing. I wasn't sloppy, you know what I mean? And I loved alcohol, but it's detectable. So I pop a pill in my mouth. There's no odor. There's no sloppiness. You know, there's no slurring my words, and I can drive.
Right.
You know, that was my ultimate
thing. And you're
thing.
A mom and all these things, and you want to be able to got to put on the PTA face is what you're saying.
Exactly. Yep. And I could control my feelings by I knew how many pills to take to be just perfect, just right.
When did that start, when you got back?
Oh, yes.
So after your mom, this thing, because we're here, we're there, this, that.
Right.
And I'm sitting here thinking, like, just so I have a good understanding, and you get back home, the first day you get back, your mom overdoses, and you're like, I can't deal with this, so I'm going to get drunk, but then maybe pop some of her pills too.
Yeah.
Which is so crazy, because you just watched your mom, like, on the same thing, but like, she didn't know how to do it, or, I mean.
Exactly. She did that on purpose, you know.
Right. Like, you know. She has a problem. Like, you can do these in such a way. Right. Did she get Narcan and stuff, or?
I don't really think they had Narcan back then.
Right.
You know, I'd never heard of it, so they just.
I mean, how old are you around this time?
I was 24.
So 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So now, though, okay, so you're back. You've had some issues with your husband, right? You're back in the city, you know, being a mom, back at home with your mom. She's overdosing. That's causing some issues, but you're staying there and taking her pills and drinking and then getting, you know, and then still trying to play mom.
Yeah.
And what happens from there?
My son had a lot of issues from all of the changes, and I didn't know it at the time, but he pretty much has what's called Asperger's. It's a type of autism.
Right.
And so at the time, he didn't know how to express himself, so he would just act out a lot, you know? I had that on top of everything.
Right.
And I just remember going into the bathroom at home sometimes, then closing the door, and I'd just sit there and I'd cry and cry. And I would say, oh my gosh, Lord God, please help me.
Right.
You know, because I wasn't getting anything for myself. I was getting no relief whatsoever. Like we said about coping skills, I wasn't putting anything back into myself. I was just depleting myself and
still giving at the same time.
Giving. All my time's taken up, not doing anything for myself. But the drugs and alcohol.
Plus, you compound the fact that you felt like a failure because of your marriage. Your husband didn't come after you. Your son has Asperger's. Your mom's got issues. You know what I mean? Like, you start tacking all these things on top of each other and with no solution. No wonder. Mm-hmm. So things just got progressively worse.
My family called me out. And they said, you need help. And, I wasn't home even a year. And I went... my first rehab.
Really?
Yeah.
So you now, and you can own that. Like, I mean, you're like, yes, I do have a problem. Like, what did you fight it with the nail?
All along, you know, we think people don't know, or it's not as bad, you know, as bad.
Like you just said, like, I'm not dumb enough to let it go like that.
Right.
Right. But yet.
But then I was taking just too many, and I was literally like making myself ill. I started like vomiting and, you know, things. And I ended up in the hospital like four times within like 5 days. And so that's when my parents were like, okay, you need help. Because I think it was like causing like
organ damage.
Yes.
Yeah, like liver failure.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, because you're popping. You're like, you're swallowing them, right? Just popping a whole bunch of pills.
Snorting at this point.
Well, you gotta give me whatever day that was where you're like, I'm going to start snorting these bad boys.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It just happens. I know it happens. And because you know you get that effect quicker.
Yep.
But you were doing, were these regular Percocets? Were these OxyContin? Or?
No, they were just regular. My favorite was Percdens.
So then there you go. So when you really break that down, those have a lot of Tylenol in them.
Exactly.
And that causes liver, you know, or kidneys, you know, all sorts of, it just causes lots of problems. Because next thing you know, you get 10,000 milligrams worth of Tylenol in your bloodstream every day.
Yeah.
And you do this day, the same thing, Eminem. Like Eminem almost died because of all the Vicodin he was taking.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. So now you get sent the treatment, mm-hmm. and you go as a 28-day program? Or
yeah. And what's funny is my parents set it up through my insurance that I still had through the military, so they covered it. But so I was able to go to, like, someplace nicer.
Right.
And I went to Pennsylvania, and so I didn't know really anything about rehab except for that celebrities went, and I'm a singer. So
you're a celebrity.
I put my shades on, and I get on the plane, and I'm like, yeah, I'm a singer from Ohio, and I'm on my way to rehab.
Really?
Yeah.
That's actually kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
So you... Hey, whatever we have to convince ourselves of, right? You get to Pennsylvania, first time in treatment, and do you feel like you learned anything?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you were going to be fixed?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I'm not even kidding. I thoroughly, thoroughly believed that I would stay sober.
Right.
I can remember, actually, they had all of us sitting in a circle around the room in these chairs. There was at least like 60, 65 of us when you put the guys and the girls together.
Okay.
And they said the statistics is that maybe one of you will make it out of this whole room. And I knew it was me. I'm the one. You guys you're not going to make it. I'm sorry. But because I was going to. I really believe that.
You're like, right.
That I was the one, you know?
And that's funny. Based off of what?
Based off of that, okay, I never want to do this again. I never want to leave my child again. You know, I think I have the solution. I know what to do when I get home. I need to get in AA, you know, immediately. And
yeah, I grew
do
up with
what
that,
they told me
so,
to.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and I did, and I stayed sober for a while, you know? I really did. I got involved. I ran through AA like you wouldn't believe. I dated everybody that there was in AA, you
right.
know? And I'm going to dances. I'm going to picnics, you know, all these things. I was really involved.
Then what happened?
I mean,
like, no, that this is a thing we opt everybody... It's rare that someone goes to treatment for the first time in their life and stops. That's true. I'll agree with that. I don't like that thing that treatment centers do when they say statistics will be that only one of you gets that. I don't know why you would say that to a whole bunch of people. I don't know why that's conducive. Is that even true? I don't even know, right? And mm-hmm. maybe you should really reevaluate the fact if you have 65 people and there only one of them is going to make it is a huge problem, okay? There has to be something... You know, maybe that reflects on the treatment itself.
Yeah.
We could agree with that. I think that personally, because I think anybody can have recovery. Not everybody gets it. I understand that. But there's got to be a way to increase those numbers because mm-hmm. it's just there has to be. That's the way I look at things, right or wrong. Okay. But you get out and you do all the right things. You know, perceivably, you get into a 12-step and you show up and what do you get a sponsor?
Mm-hmm.
And so you do all those things. You're going to meetings. You know, hook like, look, even it doesn't matter. You can hook up with whoever you want to. You're a grown woman. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Right or wrong, you know, that's based on your own ethics, okay? Mm-hmm. But you weren't married, so whatever.
No.
So then there you go. But it didn't stick. And this happens, right? This does happen. I mean, I've relapsed doing 12-step. I have gone back out. I mean, it's a gradual process most of the time, except for the first time. Like the first time I went to treatment, I got out, I was on cocaine like a week. Like it didn't take any time. But what do you think happened?
Or
what
do you remember? I know what happened. I went to go to a dance, and I had a new outfit. I was super excited, and I was supposed to go with a girlfriend of mine. She canceled last minute. I had a babysitter. Like I said, I needed to do things for myself, you right. know, to put something back in myself. So I was determined to go out. And there was a guy that was in AA who had asked me out a few times, and I had said no. Just real flirtatious. And I, like I said, I need all the attention to myself. He was just like a ladies' man. That's not my type. So, but that particular night, I needed plans, and he was available. And we went out to dance, and he took me to this swingers club and basically raped me. And then pretty much threw me to the wayside like I was a piece of garbage. So, and I ended up at UC Hospital.
I mean, this happened sober.
Yeah, yeah.
So you ended up, so, I mean, like saying, do no. Like, I mean, like when
oh,
you
yeah.
say.
Pushing, yes.
No, I mean, because
no.
I don't want to glug.
No.
You can't bring up the word like rape on my show and not, I mean, not that I want to expand upon. No, no, no. You can. You can talk about anything you want. You can say, you know, go fuck yourself. It doesn't matter. Mm. Okay, that's not my point. My point is I don't want to gloss over that because this just goes to show, you know, in that the people are still sick. Okay.
Yes.
Especially in here, you just want to go have fun for, and your girlfriend, you know, for whatever reason, can't go out. You still want to do that. You're going down your Rolodex of people you could hang out with. This guy that you never want to give any chance to, fine, whatever. At least I'll go have some fun. Mm-hmm. At least I know that I look good tonight. But then you end up getting taken advantage of, right?
Yes. Yes.
And in this, like, you know, and you say, like, kick to the side, like you go to some swingers club. It's not what you had planned, but you're like, whatever. I mean, I don't want you to necessarily break down all the tragic stuff in your life. But if this is something you're willing to talk about, I think we should.
Yeah.
So just break that down for me then. So you say you go out with this guy, you go to, you know.
Well, he said that it was this club, but when we got there, there was no sign outside. And I'm thinking, what is, you know what I mean? What place doesn't have a sign? Like, you know. But there were tons of cars in the parking lot. So I'm like, okay, there's people here. You know, I'll be okay. Because I really did kind of feel on edge. It was weird, like even on the way there with him in the car. And we get there and we walk in and there's a window. I'm thinking it's where you have to pay, you know, to get in. And they're talking to him about his membership. And I'm like, membership? Like, how do you have a how do you have a membership to a club? And that's when I found out, like, you know, I didn't really know, but it was his membership to the Swingers Club. So he paid it, and we went inside, and it was what he said it was. You know, at first, we walk in, there's a dance floor, there's a huge screen where the music and music videos right. are playing, everybody's dancing. It looks like there's a bar there, and then there's some steps and stuff and a smoke pit, everything. So, and he introduced me to these people, and let me tell you, these people were so nice. They were so warm and inviting, and they were so sweet and just, you know, poured over me, and they made me feel like, you know, good about myself, like, oh my gosh, you're so pretty, and you're the, well, I didn't know why, because they wanted to have sex with us.
Right.
You know, and he was like, oh, yeah, they're, you know, let me show you up behind the stage, show you what's back there. And I'm like, okay. And we walk up there, and there's these rooms with windows. And there's different things in the rooms, like, and you can watch people having sex. You can have sex with whoever you want to. And, I mean, immediately my heart's racing, and I'm freaking out, like, okay, time to go.
Right,
you know?
I don't want, like, I mean, I'm down for a lot, but no, I barely know you. Right.
Yes, I was scared, very scared. So he's trying to talk to me about, like, you know, them and, trying to
warm,
get,
convince warm you,
me
this, like, hey,
you know,
this will
that
be fun, live
that,
a little.
That this is cool, but he's not coming out and directly saying we're going to have sex, you know. So I'm telling him, no, like, whoa, I'm not interested, you know. This just isn't me, you
right.
know? And he was like, okay, I understand. Well, then let's just go in here, you know what I mean? And hang out and talk, like, you know, maybe make out type thing. And we went in that room, and he took it advantage, full advantage of me, you know. And I was horrified, but at the same time, fight or flight, man. I did. I thought, oh my, you know, well, I mean, I did. I really did was trying to push him off of me. He's very big and muscular. I could not get him off of me. So I thought if I just lay there and comply, you know, the less it'll be over and it won't hurt as bad. And I just want to get out of here, whatever I have to do to get out of here, you know? And so I just quit fighting and I just dropped, you know, and it was over. I remember tears pouring out of my eyes and putting my clothes back on, well, my pants, and just walking out of there. And I had no idea where I was. I had no car. I had no idea how to tell anyone, like, what just happened to come get me where I don't even know where I'm at, you know? And I really just didn't know what to do. So he left me, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, you know, I sat there for a while, and I found out he had gone off to the room and had sex with that couple. Right. And then he comes back like, all right, let's go. You know, not the same person that picked me up. Not the same tone. None of that.
Why would he have to be?
I mean, right. And again, I just wanted to get out of there. I wanted to get home. And we got in the car, and I pretended like I was asleep the whole way home. Just pretend like I was sleeping.
Just like you did when you were a kid.
Exactly. I didn't even think about that. But yeah. Yeah, I pretended like I was sleeping until we got there. And then I just got my stuff and I got out.
It's wild because you've always struck me as a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Like based off of like you are animated and you're loud and you're like, you know, a lot of energy. You just seem like a strong, not that you're not a strong woman. I'm just like the way I've always perceived you is like, do not mess with Ashley. Like, right. I can just see her, like, just going toe-to-toe, but really, it's more like you clam up then.
Yeah.
I'm saying not in every situation, but, like, just...
I think back then I was a different person, because today I really would. I will kick your ass, you know? I think because I've had enough.
Right.
You know? No more. After all the things that I've been through, I don't have time, you know what I mean? Or nor will I allow anyone to disrespect me or to take advantage of me again.
Right.
So that's where the fighting, feisty thing that you see today. But I didn't power.
Okay.
I didn't have that courage.
No, and that's fine. I mean, so, well, then I stand corrected because you are who I think you are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Okay. Well, good. So now this happens, right? Now you've gone through these things you never intended to use again.
Mm-hmm.
But you were raped
mm-hmm.
by a man that was in recovery right. or in the rooms of a 12-step program. And what ends up happening that night?
So, no.
Or just
it took
like
me probably 2-3 months.
But just did you just have a lot of guilt or what was your mindset after
that?
Oh,
I was scared shitless because at first I went to the police, Women Helping Women. I mean, I was at the hospital. They did a rape kit, pictures, took my stuff.
Yeah, so like this is a full process.
Yes. So,
I'm just saying is like you went through the whole thing. I mean, this was a big deal.
Yeah, but I was petrified because I guess word got out that I had been, you know, raped or had said that. And I can remember getting a text message from him saying, "You have a big mouth." And I was really scared.
Like for your life scared.
Yeah. I really didn't know, you know, what could happen. And honestly, AA is where I went to get my solution. My right. solution is now poisoned.
And
you know, it's polluted because I don't know if I'm going to run into him. A lot of people were talking because he is a very attractive, successful man. So I can even remember people saying like,
"Oh,
she
you?
Made that up.
Great.
She just wants attention, you know." And I mean, for them to say that and me knowing what happened, I mean, that breaks my heart.
It breaks my heart, and I wouldn't even
yeah.
go through it.
So,
I'm sure it breaks the listener's heart to think like, you know, all things aside, you know, and the choices that you've made. And for you, nobody deserves that. Nobody deserves to be taken advantage of, especially in that way. You're a mom, you know, you're a woman. I mean, like all of these things, and you were trying to give your life an honest shot, you know, and all those other things like, did you work a perfect program? Who gives a shit? You know what I mean? That stuff doesn't even come into the picture because it's still wrong. Mm-hmm. So now you have to live with this. Now you have to live with the fear, the fact that this happened, all the stuff leading up to that. And, you know, 2-3 months after that happens, I mean, do you just find yourself in a situation where you just said, screw it?
Yeah, I was out singing.
Okay.
And I just remember I was at a bar singing and I thought, I'm going to get a glass of wine. You know, that's not harmful. It's wine. And I'm going to have one glass and that's it. And I did. So I thought.
So you're like,
that
okay, cool. I know how to do it. Right. Like right. Most of us do.
Mm-hmm.
It's always the thing that people, we talk about it, especially when I go to meetings, this idea of, you know, controlled drinking or, you know, it's not always going to be bad the first time you go back out. And it hasn't been in my own life, too, right? Like, I have said, I'm never going to do heroin again. I'm never going to use a needle. I'm never going to do these things. But I can take, a couple pills or I can have a drink tonight. And first time I have a drink, not an issue. Second time, not an issue. It was a great time, a lot of fun. But next thing you know is all of a sudden the other ideas for the other things become easier to get to because you've already passed that threshold. So the best way for you to avoid that is to not put these things in your body. Now, look, some people's programs of recovery, and we're going to get into that, like require other things. But that's not for me to make the decision whether or not that's right or wrong. You could be a complete jerk for all I care, as long as it doesn't impact my own life. Because my recovery is mine and yours is yours, mm-hmm. right? But now you, this happens and it sets off what? I mean, just sequence of like just, I mean, we're talking years now that you stayed back out or?
Yeah, probably about three and a half years. And the difference this time is pills are not the thing. They're hard to get a hold of. They're really expensive. And like I said, I ended snorting them before I went to rehab. So
right.
Somebody is showing me heroin is just like crushed up pills. You just snort it and it's the same thing. But it's cheaper. It's what's available now. It's
same story across the board,
yes.
Right? And you would never have thought that you're like, I'm going to be doing heroin.
Oh, nobody, no.
Nobody, like, I mean, if pharmaceuticals are one thing, you know what you're getting. Now, because of availability and people that you're hanging out with, heroin is introduced. And to the majority of us, it became okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was what was around.
Yeah.
So now you're doing heroin.
Yes.
Right? And you're snorting it, and your life becomes a blur, I bet.
Pretty much. Like, I yeah, don't remember
I don't
a whole lot. I'm terrible with names. Like, you know.
No, I'm serious.
But like, I wasn't a partier. I was a homebody still. I stayed at home.
You're just a heroin addict.
Yeah. And this is around the time that I got together with my husband today, and we were dating. He moved in right away. He had no idea. I can remember telling him all the time, like, because I work and, you know, I do these shows and my shows don't get over till, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning. And then we got to pack everything up and come home. I'm doing cocaine, you know.
Right.
So he thinks that, oh, she just does cocaine on the side and
here
you
and
know,
there
yeah.
and just, you know, just kind of keep her going. And she's a musician and this and that. No harm, no foul.
Right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look. Once again, you know, people in the United States go through that very same thing. Some people use drugs recreationally. They do. I mean, it's an easy sell. I know, I mean, believe it or not, I mean, I'm not going to condone the behavior, but.
No.
So, but sooner or later.
Things start to happen. I lose my job because I'm late all the time. Then once I no longer am employed, I don't really have any like self-worth or anything like to hold me accountable. So I'm just drinking all day and I'm doing drugs basically. And it just got worse and worse and worse and worse.
How are you funding that at the time?
I mean, I would get other jobs I took advantage of my grandma a lot. I would ask her for money all the time and I still had my son. So I was getting child support
from your ex, right?
From my ex, very large sum.
So that was helping fuel it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had money all the time.
Well, there you go. Well, that's, I'm always curious when people like, look, I was an addict and you said, you know, you weren't being able to go to work. Well, how did you fund it? Like for me, you know, I took advantage of my mom or, you know, stole money out of my joint bank account or would do odd jobs. And I mean, whatever it was, I mean, lie, cheat, steal. That's how we get what we need in order to make sure that we can stay well. And here you're fully addicted. Did you ever experience like withdrawal symptoms?
No.
So you were really.
I had
consistent.
Plenty of money.
Okay. So, but things were not good at home. You're probably acting more erratically, maybe a lot like your dad was when you were a kid?
I think I was just getting more sloppy, honestly. Well, I'm passing out. I'm nodding out, you know.
So you wouldn't ride this wave of being like super mom and then mom that can't move?
Right. I'm putting on a show for my son. Okay. Now I cook dinner every night. We have picnics in the living room pretty much every night to have our dinner. And we would watch a movie like I did with my mom every night in the living room. So I'm thinking, doing a good job.
Like you did years ago. Like you're so, you're really good at lying to yourself. You know that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know I am too. I just am trying to draw some similarities in your life to see what type of person you are when you're using. And I wasn't around for that, thank God. But look, it's not sustainable is the bottom line, right? It's not.
No, but I thought I was better than. I did not see myself as like this heroin addict person on the
even
street
though you're doing
or
heroin.
Prostitute. Yeah, or doing all these things. I still have my job. My son gets to school on time. You know, I'm cooking dinner every night. We're having family time.
That's what I'm saying. You lie
but
to
I'm
yourself.
Just high through the whole thing.
That's
so
the funny thing.
I think I'm fine.
Well, it's just so funny. You're like, I didn't see myself as some like heroin addict, yet you are a heroin addict.
What's wrong with that?
Well, that's,
you know, and still, you know, I can still even tell myself what's wrong with that. I was, you know, I'm doing all these things that a normal person would do who's, you know, sober, but I'm just underneath. You know, using. So I'm not hurting anybody. How am I hurting anybody is definitely the question that I ask. You know what I mean? I'm here. I'm showing up. I'm doing all these things. So who am I hurting besides myself?
Right.
Leave me alone. You know?
Right. And am I even hurting myself, really? I'm sure you had to tell yourself at times. I remember telling many times, like, look, just let me do what I'm doing. Really? Like, it has nothing to do with you.
Yeah. And then one night, my husband asked, he never drank. He might do Adderall like here and there back then. But I remember that night him asking for a line of my cocaine. And I'm like, oh, my God, no. And he's like, why?
If you can do it, I can do
it.
Yes. Right.
Why are you not, you know? And I had to tell him the truth that it wasn't cocaine. It was heroin. So, no, definitely, you do not want to touch this.
What did what was his reaction when you told him it was heroin?
He was shocked. He was devastated. Like, what? Oh, my gosh, Ashley, like,
you can't,
you know,
do this. What are you talking about?
But then he's doing it alongside of me.
Mm.
Yeah. So I feel guilt for introducing him to heroin.
Do you still feel that guilt?
I mean, everybody has a choice, just like I had a choice when I started. But there are times that I blame my mom. You know what I mean? Like, but working the step work, you know what I mean? I realized
you've been able to look
that,
into that and realize that you can only be responsible for you and all those things.
Exactly.
I just am curious because I know there's a lot of people who have who either listen to this or just in general experience things where they feel like they're the ones who are responsible for the demise of somebody else.
Right. Now,
because they were in a relationship and next thing you know, they're using a needle, but the other person isn't. And they're like, just try it with the needle. Like sick people or hurt people hurt people. Like, you know, misery loves company. All of these things they have those sayings for a reason. But now you and your boyfriend or your husband are doing that. Right. Doing this together.
Mm-hmm.
And that causes a whole new layer of issues.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
So what is
fighting
that?
Fighting over who gets the bigger line, you know, he started using needles before I did. So now I could turn that around and say he introduced me to using it that way.
Mm.
You know, but.
So how long before you got in trouble?
Well, like I said, I was using for probably a good three and a half years, and my ex-husband, being the military man that he was, and he was a police officer, I believe, at the time, he had me arrested.
So he knew that this is what you were doing, even though you were up here?
And I thought that nobody knew, because I had been through two more rehabs after that.
But I
really didn't give it a shot. Did not do AA. Didn't do anything like I did the first time.
Right.
Pretty much like you said, I just came right back home and just went right back to it.
Okay.
So the rehabs didn't work. But I thought that since I had just gone to rehab, everyone thought that I was still sober. So, I show up to drop my son off, and I go to pull out of the driveway, and two police officers pull me over immediately. And they're like, you know, we've been told that you're using and we need to search your car. I'm just like, oh my gosh. And I have to go to work, and I work at a group home for, abused children, and I'm a heroin addict.
Yeah, there's no issue there.
Oh, no.
I mean, we don't even have to go down that thing just to know that you were got the blinders on fully.
Oh, yeah.
And your ex-husband's calling, having the police, because he knows you're getting high. And you've got his son, right?
Yeah.
In your car.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, and I'm sure you're pissed off that this is happening. When we look at that, this is going to set the chain of events that actually helped save your life.
And I can't thank him enough, honestly. And I saw that pretty quickly. I was mad, obviously, like that night.
Like,
and then
really?
When
Why
I find out that I'm in drug court,
right.
I had no idea. Like, I'd never been arrested or dealt with the law, period,
ever in my life.
This
treatment.
Is my very first time dealing with the law and being arrested. Luckily, I didn't have to go to jail or anything. They just arrested me, processed me, and put me out right away and just said, be at court in the morning.
Right.
And I did. I went to court in the morning and everything. And then they assigned me to Judge Burke. And I had no idea what I was in for.
No, I don't think anybody really does.
But I skipped a lot of that because I could have probably been in her courtroom for months before anything even happened. But immediately I told my lawyer, I need help. I'm not going to pass your drug tests.
Right.
I can't stop and I need help. And she was like, I'm so glad that you told the truth and that you came to me and asked. And they got me in detox immediately. And you know what? I'm thinking again, I'm never going to drink again. I'm never going to get to use again. So I need to get as messed up as possible before I go in here because it's the last one, man.
It's always so insane.
And I was so messed up that they couldn't even process me. They told me I had to go home and come back the next day.
Because
I was so messed up. I was so oh my gosh. Yeah. And I probably scared people that day because my sister-in-law and her boyfriend came home and found me on the floor.
You're lucky you're still here.
Yeah. And I'm like, what, dude? Like, I just passed out. It's not a big deal. Like, I didn't overdose. I just passed out. Because I was taking, sleeping pills, heroin, and drinking vodka all at the same time.
Yeah. Like, that's, your MO. And
yeah. So I went back the next day, and I went to detox. I was only there for like 2 or 3 days. I'm not a hard detoxer. I've never really gotten sick. So I start the ADAPT program right away and I hated it.
I hated it. It's not easy.
No, I'd never experienced anything before.
Look, that's what people, I hope that you never have to go through a court ordered treatment program. I mean, look, it saves lives. It helps save mine. There's no doubt about that.
Oh,
but
yeah.
If you can avoid it and you can pay for treatment or you can, lay on a couch and go at it, I would highly recommend that because the court is a blunt object. And while there are amazing people and Ashley and I can both attest to the fact that Judge Burke as an individual is an amazing person, it's not the best path in order to get to recovery. It's just not. And but people can get clean anywhere. I've learned this. So you're thrust into something. It opens up a new world to you because now you're being required to do things. Now the law component, having a probation officer, an intensive outpatient, and peeing in a cup, having a color number, like all of these things, and probation fees, and I mean the list goes on.
Gosh,
so it hasn't been easy, and I know that because I've been through it myself. And I think you had some ups and downs and some slip ups and stuff like that.
But it took me 3 years.
That's what I'm saying. So, back and forth, and we don't have to analyze all of that.
No.
I'm just saying, but it just goes to show you, one, you came into this wanting help.
Yes.
And it's taking you another 3 years on top of that.
Yes.
In order to actually change your life, really. You know what I mean? Like, up and down, up and down, up and down. So as you're getting to the end of that 3 years, what was the catalyst for that change, though? Was it psychological? Was it something that you were willing to do that you weren't before? What do you think it was?
I was pregnant through the program. So how easy is that to stay sober you're pregnant? You know, it was a piece of cake. Now, after I had her, was not a piece of cake.
Like postpartum and all those things,
oh,
too?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I had postpartum depression like a mofo. I was so insecure about myself and my weight with my husband. I just swore he was cheating on me. So just all these things. So ultimately, I know the solution. I know I need, you know, to call my sponsor. I need to do these things. I start isolating. I stop going to meetings, all these things. I knew what the answer was, but I didn't want to take the time to do it. I wanted immediate, instant relief right then and there. I couldn't stand to live in my skin in my life for one more second, or I was going to kill myself. So I knew where to go and what to do. And I'm not going to, in my mind, put my child in jeopardy, you know. So I'm going to go to my mom's so that my mom is there, you know, to watch my child basically while I get high because I can't stand myself.
Damn.
And ultimately, a lot of people do not know this. I overdosed and I died. And, you know, they had to come and Narcan me 4 times, bag me, everything. And thank God they brought me back. But, I mean, although my daughter was just an infant, you know, doesn't understand what's going on, wasn't near me or anything in the other room, I can make all these excuses that she was okay. You know what I mean? She was untouched by the situation.
Right.
But what a piece of shit am I? You know what I mean? Is what I thought, like.
To do this.
Yes, and
to know better,
when I woke up and there's people standing around me, I'm foggy. I don't understand what happened. And immediately Judge Burke and my probation officer pop in my head, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm dead. I'm dead meat.
I'm
in so much trouble. My child's gonna be taken from me. I'm going to jail. It's over, you know, or I'm going back to ADAPT. Who's gonna take care of my child for 3 months while I'm in?
Inpatient, right?
And I put myself in this position knowing what the consequences could have been. But I told myself, I'm going to do just a tiny bit.
Because I need to get out of myself.
Get out of myself. And those things they're not going to happen. They can't. You know what I mean?
Isn't that wild, though? Like, our brains will tell us that somehow this is the solution. Using is going to fix whatever I'm feeling right now. It's going to fix the fact that I put myself through all these situations. It's going to fix that I don't have rent. It's going to fix.
Oh, right.
I mean, the list goes on. I mean, it's such the ultimate lie because all it is a moment of relief, yet it's cloud and it's a lie because it's not even relief, especially after you have some recovery in your body because you're like, shit, I just threw away all that recovery for this. And I feel now I'm nervous and I'm anxious and this and that. And it opens up new problems because maybe all of a sudden I get called into work or I'm supposed to pick up my kids or I get in a car accident and I'm high. Like, I mean, it just opens up so many problems. Or I don't make it out and I die.
Right.
Those are the things that people like. I mean, this is what just goes to show me that this is a sickness, right? Even faced with all of those situations, okay, in the midst of it, that's one thing. But after we are removed from it, for us to think that, okay, maybe it'll be different, shows how sick we really are.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that what I don't get into that too often on these episodes and explain to people, like, addiction is absolutely a brain disorder, is absolutely a disease, because this doesn't make sense. Having the conviction and drive to change your life and wanting recovery, and then one moment can ruin all that because of what's going on in our head is frightening. And people need to know that that's a thing. Not to say, hey, treat people with kid gloves. That's why we talk about recovery being a daily process. What I did yesterday, while it could ensure that my life may be better today, does not matter. What I'm doing right now is the most important thing. So we just carry that as it's baffling in that sense. I know it's possible. I know we can live a life of that is drug-free for the remainder of it. I know that that's a possibility, but it's also not a guarantee. Mm-hmm. And it needs to be said. People need to know that. So just continue doing what you're doing and putting the work in, because I guarantee you this, as long as you don't pick up, your life will continue to get better. Doesn't mean it gets easier, but it will get better. So now you overdose, mm-hmm. right? You get brought back to life. You have all this stuff hanging over your head. You've also spent a lot of time back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
And now I have a CPS case.
Right. And that pretty much is
oh my gosh.
Well, and now all of a sudden you invite the law of Child Protective Services, gets involved into your life.
Yeah.
And now everything changes.
Yeah.
It has to. And I remember you and I were talking a lot as this was going on, mm-hmm. right? And you, because I'm your friend, I mean, it was like, it literally went as far as you to me to you, right? Mm-hmm. And because I love you and I want you to be able to, I feel for you too, because I know the type of person you are. I know what addiction's like, and I know what drug court is like, but yet you get through it
mm-hmm.
and you make a decision that says, I have to do it. I can't, this is no more. Like, I don't care how, like, you tell me, I don't want to tell you how you felt. Tell me how you felt.
I was so willing this time to just do something different. And instead of fighting and this, that, and the other, I myself decided, I need to get into a treatment program because I just can't stop, you know? I didn't even like go back to using, but my mindset was like, I was mad.
Right.
I didn't get high. I didn't, out of right, all this, I didn't get high. Now I have all these consequences and I didn't even get what I was looking for.
Right.
So my mind told me you at least need to get that out of it, Ashley.
Right.
You need, you know, and it kept telling me that I need to do one more.
Yeah,
I would, you know, shut it up. You know, I knew it was a lie, but you know,
you couldn't help it. Saying it.
Yes,
in there.
And so because I was so sick and twisted in my head, I'm like, check me in somewhere, dude. Like, even if it's the psych ward, I'm crazy. I am out of my mind right now. And so that is when I got into First Step Home. And that, I will tell you, that's when my real, real recovery started. I just had that spiritual experience that they talk about. And you know what? It was not peaches and cream being there. Probably the worst things that have ever happened in my life. I've told you a lot of things that, you know, have happened. And out of all those, to me, measurably wise, doesn't compare to what I went through when I was there. All of my issues at home turned my husband into starting to go back to pills, okay? So he starts using pills, starts spending all of our money on that, and then before you know it, he's so devastated that I am gone. And I have my our child with me. She's gone too. And he's so depressed, and he'd never dealt with anything like that before. And he started doing meth because he was doing Adderall, which is like an upper,
right, no doubt,
a speed. And somebody said, probably the same way I was introduced to heroin, it's the same thing,
right,
you know?
And it's cheaper, just, and it gets you there quicker, right?
Yes. So he started doing meth while I was gone. Ultimately, he left me. In my mind, it was for another woman, because he moves in with this other woman who is older. I'm like, oh my gosh, like
what is going on?
Why her over me? You know, all these things. But it was the drugs. The drugs were controlling him 100%.
Right.
He goes where the drugs go. She's dealing them. He immediately lost his job, had our car repoed, got evicted, lost me entirely. We left, and things went to shit real fast for him. So, and you know what? I really feel like that was God finally doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. We were in this relationship, and it was like we were both starting to go down, you know? And I feel like God was like, knew that we needed to be separated in order to get help.
Mm-hmm.
So he was my higher power, my husband was. I mean, all I cared about
was being that good wife, that wife.
Yeah, how he felt about me. You know what I mean? So you can't imagine how devastated I was when I found out that he was cheating on me. I mean, what a blow. Because all I care about is him wanting me and loving me, you know? And that's the complete opposite. So because I put him as my higher power all the time, I wasn't getting recovery. And God separated me from him so that I could rechannel with him, you know, and reconnect with him and make him my higher power again. So thank God that I was where I was to be separated from everyone and everything to be able to get that back. And when I got that back, it was like better than any drug I've ever done.
Mm-hmm. I know that feeling.
Just the feeling and that love and that feeling of just want and stuff that I have searched for and wanted my entire life. I just felt this blanket of it around me. It was like him telling me, like, you don't need a man to complete you. Like, I'm your dad. Don't, you know,
right.
the things with your dad, forget about it. The things with Tyler, you know, forget about it. Like, I'm here. I will never leave you. I will never cheat on you. I'll never hurt you, you know, and that 100% I can rely upon him, you know, and what a feeling to know that that's unwavering, you know, no one can take that from me.
That's beautiful.
Somebody can take my husband. My husband could cheat on me. My husband could fall off tomorrow. You know what I mean? I don't know what that brings, but nobody can take my higher power from me. So I think that's what I needed was something that I could count on and that I could rely on, you know? And I found that while I was at First Step. So all these things that were happening in my life that were tragic, and I was devastated. I had the heaviest heart while I was there, but I had to keep going for my daughter, you know? And I just kept putting one foot in front of the other. And there were days I didn't even want to get up out of bed, you know? But I roll over, and here she is standing up in her pack and play, you know, just smiling, like, what are we going to do today? And she kept me going, you know? And, having that separation and, my husband, going through what he went through and losing everything, it woke him up too. And I feel like it was his way to reconnect with his higher power, you know? So we both found this and somehow we reconnected, you know, and our family is completely different today. Our life at home is completely different today because we know from living it that recovery and our higher power, all these things have to come first before anything, before each other, before our daughter, before work, before school, anything. That has to come first because without it, none of those things matter. They say that all the time. Anything you put in front of your recovery, you're gonna lose it. But it's true.
Right. Well, they also say do it, you know, it works if you work it a day at a time, like all those things.
Yes,
you realize.
And I had to do it in little bits and pieces. And we even talked about, like, you know, people, are you nervous about today? No, because I'm not thinking about what's going to happen in 20 minutes from now, an hour from, you know what I mean? I'm here. That's the thing that I have learned to do is to be grounded and to center myself in the moment right now. Quit focusing on all the terrible things that happened in your past. Quit worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow because it's not here yet and you can't control it anyways. Just focus on right here and right now, you know? And it sounds simple, but sometimes that is really effing hard to do.
Right.
You know? But I find that when I do, I'm okay. And the fear and the anxiety,
right, it
just falls to the wayside.
And that's what it's all about, Ash. I think that, the way that you've broken these things down and really, I mean, your life has just led you to a relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
And from that allows you to be all the things that you had cherished for so long, a good wife, a good mother, a good friend, a lady that's able to give back and receive at the same time. Now, you know, and this has been able, like that deeply personal relationship, which you talk about, has allowed you to go about things differently and have, and you know, what's funny, like I would have never said that having known you over the past couple of years, because I have, that you have been any, that you speak any differently than you have. I mean, maybe at first you were a little, but I've always think you were wonderful, bottom line. And I think you will continue to be, especially if you stay on this path and you and you keep those things first. Now, I'm going to ask you the same thing that I ask others, you know, towards the end of this, and that's if you could say something to someone who's still struggling, what would that be?
That feelings aren't facts, and just never, ever, ever give up. The hardest thing to do is to ask for help. I know for me, I thought that I had to appear to have it all together, because if I didn't, that meant something was wrong with me. But it's the complete opposite, you know. I have to be willing to ask for help, or, you know, none of it's going to matter anyways. And that's really hard. So to be willing to ask for help, definitely to be 100% honest, because anything we hold back, it's going to
blow up in our face, right?
Yep. And just like I said, feelings aren't facts. No matter how bad you feel right now, that can change in 5 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, just like if I would have held on, you know, maybe even 15 more minutes, who knows? Maybe I would have gotten through it. Maybe I wouldn't have overdosed. Maybe I wouldn't use, because feelings change. I mean, like the weather in Cincinnati, you know, like just give it 5 minutes and, you know, like it's going to be something completely different. So, yeah.
There you go. Well, Ashley, thank you so much for coming in here. On a Sunday, after you have done a whole bunch of service work and stuff, and to all my listeners, thank you for all that you do. Paige is continuing to grow. All my international listeners, you guys are awesome. Thank you for making us a part of your day. I just saw that someone streamed this show down in Cancun like 24 times in 3 days. Like, and I was like, someone's on vacation in Cancun and is listening to my show. So whoever you are that's down in Cancun, message me. I would love to hear from you. But that's pretty much it. Ashley, thanks again to my listeners. And as always, do big things.